Good morning. We're going to be in Hebrews chapter 12 and 13 this morning as we get going. It's wonderful to be here with you and awesome to be able to study God's Word. And as I say and probably show at least in the Scripture when I get to speak is the older I get, the more I preach, the more I know the extent of my own ignorance, which might be wisdom. Who knows? I don't know if that's a good definition or not, but it is good to be here with you. We're so thankful for everyone who's here, everyone that's joining us via Zoom this morning. I'm thankful especially for Will being here. Will's part of our Christian leadership course, and a lot of our crafts and things that we've done for our intergenerational Sundays, he's been a part of putting those together. And so I wanted to encourage them to come and visit with us once just so they can kind of see. But we will be in Hebrews chapter 12 and 13. Don't worry, we're not going to look at everything in there. We're going to look at kind of the bookends of the thoughts there. This week, earlier, I was invited to speak at Fayetteville High School's baccalaureate, and that was kind of out of nowhere. It's awesome. It's great. I enjoyed it. It was wonderful. I think that might be the first time I've ever been in that building. So that was really neat. But some of these thoughts will come from that. And the idea, I've got 3 points this morning. They all start with the same letter. And so, hey, I'm telling you, Billy Smith at Freed Hardin would be super proud if he heard that. But we'll look at Hebrews chapter 12, and we'll look at verses 1 through 3. And the first point this morning is that consistency compounds. Consistency compounds. Verse 1, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. When I think about those witnesses, I think back to what we just partook in, the Lord's Supper. There are people around the world this morning doing the exact same things, maybe look a little differently than what we do here, but they've been doing it for thousands of years. Think about the connection that is there. It's a similar connection to those at Passover. They would say there was one Passover, but we celebrate those things and we do the things that they did then in a connection to those people. And think about the blood of Christ and the connection that's there. People have done that for centuries, for thousands of years, many at the cost of their own lives, if caught doing so. And yet they made it important enough. It was important enough for them to continue to do it. So that consistency. So verse 3, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. What is the point of the text? He tells us so that we won't become weary, that we won't become faint-hearted, that we won't become so discouraged. He says, you look, he knew the roller coasters of life. Even people who love us sometimes change the conditions of their affections, right? He says Jesus will never change the conditions of his affection. Once again, 2,000 years people have been partaking in the Lord's Supper, and we do that with them in communion consistently. It compounds. We are the beneficiaries of their lives. And it all connects us back to Jesus, the chief cornerstone. This house is built on Jesus Christ. We are just another brick in the wall, you may say. And so that consistency, the goal line doesn't move. Think about that. How many things change in our life? How many times do people change what they want from us, right? Society itself is ever changing. For years, I learned that race is inconsequential. None of us get to choose that. We don't get to go to the big concession stand in the sky and choose who our parents are, right? And we won't get into that. Some of us in here may be like, I would totally have picked different parents if I could. Maybe so. Maybe my kids will say that one day. Who knows? But we don't get that choice. And so it's not something that we choose. And for years, we train ourselves to see people as Christ saw them. And then now it's, no, we're back to square one. That's the most important thing about them. And that flies in the face of the gospel. The gospel does not teach us that. Our identity is in the consistent Jesus Christ. He is the author and finisher of our faith. Vince Lombardi once said, perfection is not attainable, but if we chase perfection, we catch excellence. We catch excellence. That's what we're in the business of as Christians, is we are chasing perfection. We are looking to the finish line that never changes. Verse 2, the author in the KJV says he is the finisher of our faith. Think about what we actually do in Christianity that amounts to much of anything. He's done all the heavy lifting. He's done all the trail blazing, and we just follow in his footsteps. I say we just, that's difficult. That's enough for me, right? To keep me busy for the rest of my life is chasing the perfection of Jesus in the hopes that we will catch excellence. And part of catching excellence is the ability to look at where we've come short and to admit it. One of the most natural things that should come to Christians is for us to go, hey man, I blew that one. I didn't do well on that. I'm thankful for another day. His mercies are new every morning. That's why that book verse is so hopeful. A lot of life is ever changing. So you look at the bookend. We start with the beginning chapter, the author, and how does he finish our faith? How can he finish our faith? You look at chapter 13 and verse 8. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. Now let's all count on one hand how many people or organizations can say that about themselves. I would say zero outside of Jesus. Think about the consistency he brings to your life. It's a roller coaster. He admits that, but he also says, I will never forsake you. Now let's count on one hand how many people who have made that commitment, maybe there's a few of those, but how many of them are consistently living out that commitment, right? I want to be faithful. We're coming up on an anniversary on Tuesday, but let me tell you, there have certainly been times in those years where I've not been who I committed to be. And, you know, if the Lord gives me a longer life, I'll still be found trying to be the best husband I can be. To Whitney, as long as she's here, as long as I'm here. And the chase for that perfection continues. And so as long as there's struggle, really struggle can be looked at as a positive. It can be looked at as an opportunity to show the finisher of our faith. A lot of life is ever changing. The people of your life are consistently one thing, changing. They're very consistent at changing. And depending on what relationship it is, I may treat one of my own children differently than I treat the other. And maybe that's warranted sometimes. You know, they all have different personalities. But the consistency we're looking for. The second point is consistency compounds. Consistency, you're going to catch a theme running here. In Hebrews chapter 12, verses 6 through 11, now the focus changes to how we become consistent. It first starts, right, the author, the beginner of our faith, and it also finishes with Jesus. But what do we do in the meantime? We run like Jesus. We run like Jesus. I need someone to show me how to do it. I'll wear a tie this afternoon for our baccalaureate, and I can't tell you how long it took me to learn how to tie a tie. And so what did I do when I learned to tie a tie? I tied them all once. I don't untie them. I tie them all once. That's a beautiful picture of what the Holy Spirit does. Hey, I'm going to tie you up once so I don't have to do it again. I think a lot of times we keep going back and forth and reminding God of things he already knows. He says, I've forgiven that. Why are you bringing that up again? We have moved on. I've tied that tie and it's tied and it's not going anywhere unless you untie them, right? Unless you untie them. And so that consistency that compounds, verse 6 through 11, the Bible is so practical, and I love it. It's amazing. When I got up to speak on Tuesday, one of the verses they read is actually the Proverbs quote here of verse 6, and we had not got together and organized this. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. He says, if the Lord has chosen you, if the Lord is a part of your life, discipline's coming. That is the connection between you and him, right? If that certificate never got signed for my son or my daughter that the judge signed, they're always going to be my kid, regardless of what this country says, right? That's my wife, regardless of what the country says and what the government says, because we've entered into a committed relationship. That's great to have all those things. I don't think it's wrong to have all those things. But they do not dictate to me the commitment that we have to one another. And so what God's saying is if you're a son, you're going to be disciplined. Because he loves you. Loves you too much to leave you there. He's going to train you how to run the race. That's what we do a lot of times. I dunked him. He's good. Figure it out on your own. And God does not do that to us. God sends people. He disciplines us. Disciples, right? It's kind of the key word there. And so there are these idea of consistency. Verse 7, it is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits in life? For they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. I want to be coached. As a former coach, there is a major difference between the ones who want to be coached. Coach, don't leave me alone. I want you to push me. I want to be the best I can be. And the only way you can do that is to be challenged. Very different attitudes. So you're saying if you want to be like Christ, it's going to have to take this coachable, moldable mentality that is becoming sparser and sparser, scarcer and scarcer in the world today. Verse 28, you can go ahead and read on through 14 if you like. Of that previous passage, but we'll look at verse 28. Therefore, let us be grateful for receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, and thus let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and awe. You may can question, and I'll be the first to admit that I have disciplined my children out of anger from time to time. And maybe my motivation wasn't, hey, I want the best for you. I want you to feel my love. It was, hey, stop being annoying. You're driving me crazy. I got to get this done. And that's not the best motive in the world. It's an effective motive sometimes, but it's not the best. And he says, God is disciplined. You never have to question why the purpose behind the outcome that God is wanting in your life is to look like his son, because he loves you too much to leave you. You never have to question that, right? There are people who have a hard time with that idea of God the Father because we project our father's mistakes on him. And he's saying there in Hebrews, you don't have to do that. Because you never have to question his motives. Think about that. How much time do we spend trying to decipher people's motives? A lot. And if you are a person who watches a lot of the news on TV, you spend a lot of time deciphering what people's motives are. He says you never have to do that with God. His motives are to make you look like the Son so that you can finish the race. You know, if God was looking for a reason to be mad at you, he'd have had it a long time ago. You ever thought about that? Like, God's mad at me. If he wanted to be mad at you, he doesn't need your help. He doesn't need your permission. He's not looking to pour his wrath out on you. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's to make you look like the Son so that you can run the race better. Verses 1 through 4 of chapter 13, let brotherly love continue. Do not neglect to show partiality or hospitality to the strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. There are two pains in life. There's the pain of discipline and the pain of regret. As a coach, I've felt both. You know, there are times where we lost, and we may have lost big, but I walked away going, we had done everything in our power to be the best we could be, and it just wasn't enough. There's a very different feeling of walking away going, we got beat and we got beat because we didn't do everything we could have done to win. So it's a very two different. One of those you can sleep at night with. One of those you remember many, many years afterwards. Maybe back to Mike's point this morning during the Lord's Supper. And so he says, if you can learn, if you can handle that pain of discipline, then you'll never have to deal with the pain of regret. That's a wild statement. You think about that. The quote is actually disappointment. I kind of disagree on that, right? You can be disappointed and it not be regret. Those are two different things. And so I look more at it as regret. The pain of discipline, you look at Hebrews 12, 6 through 11 that we just read. You look at the pain of regret. and people will suffer that. That may be the most difficult thing I've not experienced. I hope I never do. For those who get to that point where they get to God's judgment, can you imagine the amount of regret to hear the words, "Depart from me"? I can barely say it, much less think about hearing the words and the regret that will come with that for so many. I've had people who said, "Oh, Coach Creasy hates me. He's hard on me. He's difficult, man." So, well, listen, it takes way too much effort to hate somebody. It just does. It's much easier to love someone and push them and push them. There were times where I thought there were coaches who didn't like me or didn't love me or whatever. And then I got to be a dad and I realized how much time I spent with those kids. It's like, hey, I must like you some. In fact, I tell them now, if I don't give you a hard time, then you need to question whether I like you or not. You know, if I'm talking to you and we have a little bit of back and forth, there's probably a little of affection there for you in my life, especially if you get a nickname that sticks with you for the rest of time. The pain of regret, consistent behavior determines your brand. I have students all the time, "Well, that so-and-so teacher doesn't like me." Well, what have you done to help them like you? Have you done the things necessary? Right? We all have those things that we bring on ourselves. What does that teacher think? I'm a class clown. What have you done in class all the time? Well, I guess that's accurate. And so our consistent behavior is how people see us. Even the people who killed Christians were in awe of their discipline. There are atheists, I've mentioned this, who are writing books as we speak that, hey, we don't need this Christian thing to leave the world. Like, we don't believe in God and we don't believe in Jesus, but there's something to this polite society that Christians have produced that we really like. And we need to hang on to that. So we need these folks who believe, even though we don't. That's a wild concept. But it's true. And so the pain of regret. Here's where we see Hebrews 12, 14. How can we avoid the pain of regret? We strive for peace with everyone. What's the peaceful thing to say here? What's the God-loving thing to do? We serve a Jesus who said, you know, "I came and brought a sword. I'm going to push the envelope. I'm going to push it to where you make a decision. Every time you hear the truth, we make a decision." Did you know that? Maybe you don't come forward. Maybe you don't come sit up here in these front row. Maybe you don't go to the altar call every time. But every time we hear the truth, we have a decision to make. Every time. And it can be annoying. There are times I wake up in the morning and say, "Lord, I don't want to hear what you got to say today. I'm not in that attitude." And he doesn't say, "Well, okay. All right, I'll let you off the hook." No, he loves us too much. So what's the peaceful thing to say? Strive for peace. Romans 12 says, hey, as far as it depends on you. I love that, right? As far as it depends on you. There are some people out there who just want to watch the world burn. And no matter how much peace you strive for with them, they love war. They love to stir it up. But as far as it depends on you and your personal responsibility, what are you doing? Hebrews 12, 28 says, be grateful. I've hit on this, the Thessalonians. What does it mean to be at the center of God's will? How can I be at the center of God's will? And that's a great question to ask. And it's a real simple answer in Thessalonians. He says, be thankful, because that is the will of God. No pun, will, sorry. That is the will of God, to be thankful. You know where you can be thankful? Everywhere. It's mobile. That's a wonderful thing, isn't it? It's a wonderful thing. Think about these religions that you have to make a pilgrimage. You know, if we want to go to Jerusalem, we can, but we don't have to. God says, oh, what I'm going to command you can be done day in, day out, wherever you find yourself. You don't have to go to a church building to seek peace. You don't have to do all those things to be thankful. It's a decision that we make. Hebrews 13, 1, let love continue. Romans 12, let love be genuine. Let it be real. Don't be faking it, right? Those of you that have been married a long time, right? You've learned to be able to translate an act of love, even though, you know, there are things that Whitney and I can say to each other in public, and people are like, huh? But she knows I'm giving the best effort I got. That's a wonderful thing as we come together. If we as human beings who are faulty can figure that out, then what about the creator of the universe? Right? Romans 8, there's your reference. When we don't know what to say, the Spirit intercedes for us. He translates what we're trying to say. I'm not effective sometimes in communicating what I want to communicate to my wife. And we've been married for over a decade, right? Hopefully I'm going to get better at that. But we learn to translate those things. Maybe other people wouldn't translate it that way. But we give them an A for effort. Hey, he's trying. At least he's trying. And we appreciate that about you ladies. Hebrews 13:2, show hospitality. Show hospitality. Hebrews 13:3, remember those who are in prison as what? To be pitied? As though you're in prison with them. Learning sympathy and developing this idea of empathy is a spirit thing. It's a spirit thing. Notice it doesn't say that are in there guilty, not guilty, against their will. I'm sure it's about Christians who are being persecuted, but he doesn't qualify that, right? So even if they're the most guilty person in the world, what are we supposed to do? Sympathize, at least try with them, remember them. And then Hebrews 13:4 is talking about marriage specifically there, but we can translate that into what? Keep your commitments. Let your yea be yea and your nay be nay, or be found dead trying. And that's a wonderful thing. Think about the difference in the world today if we just simply finished what we started. My encouragement to my students all the time is if you choose to finish what you start, you're already a mile ahead of most of the competition, and it's only getting worse. That's becoming even more true every single day because there's so many people out there. The minute it gets tough, I'm out. And that's another thing when we get them into Christianity and then we go, oh, just figure it out on your own. We can't be those people. We've got to be the hands and feet of Jesus. And then finally, the third point, to keep from being a hypocrite, consistency compounds. Consistency compounds. Hebrews 13:5. Something that we should all be chasing is to be content. Keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. For he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Do you have Jesus this morning? Because if you do, it's all you need. It's all you need. It's the greatest need that you'll ever have. And I say that as a person who sits in a really nice house, a nicer house than I thought I'd ever have. Two cars. I mean, I didn't grow up that way. I have more than I ever had growing up. That's because my mom sacrificed for me. But I can be one of the most ungrateful, unthankful, most warring, stirred up person. All the things he just listed, stepping all over my toes. But it comes from being content with Jesus that all those other things, right? The author, that means he's the writer of our faith and the guy who's going to be standing at the finish line. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Just think about that sometimes. When you want to quit, when I'm running a 5K and I want to quit, I think about the finish line and the disappointment on people's faces that I didn't finish. And I come around for that St. Jude finish and I'm like, oh, there's the finish line, but there is a ginormous stretch. You can see that thing forever before you cross it. And my feet feel like concrete. Maybe spiritually you feel that today. We as a body are going to sing a song to encourage you to take the next step, to finish that race, to lock eyes, as we were told this morning, right? Lock eyes with Jesus to have that joy. This morning, we would love nothing more than to assist you in whatever way that you may need so that we get the opportunity, and I try to look at it that way, to be the hands and feet of Jesus as we are challenged to be. If there's something we can do for you, if you need to be in Christ Jesus, Romans 8:1, where there is no condemnation, we would love to do that. There's a whole river out here that we could make that happen. We could do our part, which is minimal, but we can do our part. Thank Jesus that he has done all the heavy lifting to make that happen. So if there's some way we can help you, why don't you come as we stand and sing?